Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back here to our breakdown podcast edition here of Gopher Gridiron Radio. And for the first time this season, we have found him. He is back somewhere within the United States borders. You guys know him as Derek Burns, a former Gopher, Golden Gopher offensive lineman. Derek, it's been far too long, my friend. I know people have missed your analysis, people have missed your voice, and I've missed talking some football with you. So welcome back here to Gopher Gridiron Radio. How are you this evening?
I'm doing very well, guys. Thank you. It's good to be back. I appreciate it. Always good to be talking college football. You know, this time of year it's a fun time of year, and through the non-conference, and things are just kind of getting cranked up. So I'm glad to be back.
All right, let's get right into it. Talk about this Colorado State win on Saturday by 7. Derek, why don't we just start with you? What were some positives that you took away? Start with one positive that you took away from this Colorado State game.
I think on the offensive side of the ball for Minnesota, one thing you can look at is, first, let me back up. The way that Colorado State on defense handled things was they were committed to stopping Minnesota's running backs. So what they did for most of the game, and especially in running situations, was they lined up in a two-high safety look, which kept Minnesota from checking out of a run. If they had overloaded the box many times, you'll see an audible, and a team lined up checking to a pass. So they lined up and gave Minnesota a two-high safety look. Minnesota stuck with their running plays, but on the snap of the ball, called many times they had one of the safeties or an outside linebacker committed in the box. So post-snap, they were downhill playing the run. So essentially, you know, immediately after the snap of the ball, they were playing with an overloaded box. So first and foremost, I would say a positive coming out of Saturday was the success that Minnesota ran the ball, given the fact that Colorado State was gearing up to stop the run. And specifically, I think gearing up to stop the running backs. I think you could see on a few of the option read keeps, you know, there was a lot of room for Mitch Leiter, and that was, I think, a symptom of Colorado State, you know, again, keying on the running backs. But, you know, even when the running backs kept the ball, you know, with a mixture of power and zone read, had very good success from multiple guys. So that's a you know, as an offensive lineman, that's the toughest thing you're asked to do, is to run block versus a team that's committing extra guys to defending the run and then post snap just coming downhill. So I think that would be a big you know, that's what stands out to me first and foremost is a big positive takeaway.
All right, I got to jump in here, Luke. It's been far too long since we've gotten some nitty gritty offensive line talk here on Gopher Gridiron Radio, Derek. So I have to ask you, first and foremost, have you seen every Gopher game so far?
Yeah, I've watched all three.
All right, so you're well aware that through three games, Minnesota has 685 yards and 11 scores through three games. So you're somewhere around, if I do my, you know, University of Minnesota math correctly, somewhere around 225, 230 yards a game, over three scores a game on the ground. And you can just see that this offensive line is just so much, I don't know if it, obviously I think it's much improved from last season, but I also think they've simplified things. So I have to ask you, I'll tee it up pretty nicely here for you. I mean, what do you think has been the biggest difference between Minnesota's offensive line last year and the success that they've had so far in 2016?
Well, a couple things that could jump to mind are, I do think they've simplified things. I think they've put an emphasis on being physical, finishing the play, but maybe above all else, really cleaning things up on the first level. So if you look at the way that the emphasis they're putting on their combination blocks and blocking the defensive line, which is, you know, if you're going to start somewhere, that's a great place to start. I can hear the coaches saying, we're going to get things cleaned up on the defensive line. If nothing else, we're going to get these defensive linemen blocked. They're not going to be coming clean. You know, this next thing we're going to worry about are the linebackers in the secondary. But I think that's evident. I think you're seeing a better push. I think you're seeing a more physical approach on the offensive line. You're not, you know, it's not a, you're not seeing guys coming through free. You're seeing, I think, better in short yardage situations, you know, with a couple exceptions. I think that's shown. And, you know, finishing, you know, at some of the end of the end of even the Colorado State game, the end of some of the runs, you can see the rule was changed a couple of years ago on offensive linemen helping at the end of the play. They're now allowed to block defenders or block in the back of the running back to finish. And, you know, sometime on like a second and five, or, you know, where he stopped for a 4 or 5 yard gain, they can come in at the end of the play and push that guy over for a first down. So that's effort and that's coaching. I mean, the coaches see that on film and they're after those guys that aren't finishing plays. So, you know, and frankly, you talk about things like pancake blocks and stuff like that. It doesn't often those don't often happen immediately. That's a result of guys, you know, sticking with a block and following through, and a defender who's, you know, near the hole or near the runner who gets up on one foot and tries to make a tackle, that's where you can pancake and you roll over on the guy. So I think you've definitely seen more of that this year. I think that's what they've emphasized.
Derek, real quick, sticking with the offensive line talk, are there guys to you that are sticking out? I guess for me, a guy that seems to be sticking out is Jonah Persig. Ryan was telling me earlier today that he's got something like 37 knockdowns through three games. Are there other guys, maybe Persig being one, maybe even another guy that seems to really stick out that's improved this season?
Yeah, I actually would. So I think Persig he's upped his game physically. And, you know, as a tackle, sometimes if you're as a coach, if you're really become a technician and you're really worried about a lot of different things, that can, as a tackle, that pulls you away from being physical, because you're thinking about your technique. You're thinking, making sure the five things that you have to do on any particular play, you're trying to do them perfectly. And that pulls away from your effort. And again, if you limit things a little bit and allow the player to focus on physicality and finishing blocks, that's what you end up with. So I think I've seen some that from Persig for sure, which I think comes through on the stats. I've been pleasantly surprised. I think he was a backup to begin with, Ryan. You have to tell me if I'm right, but I think Jared Weiler, I've been really impressed. He's done really well. I like his mobility, you know, on power, the ability to pull. And they have a new play this year, sort of a pin and pull, the outside running play that we've seen him run maybe once, twice a game. And he really gets out there and he's good technique. He's a little bit, you know, smaller than the rest of the guys, but I think he's been a nice pleasant surprise.
Love it. So I'll move away from the offensive line here for at least a couple of minutes here. And I want to get your guys' thoughts on the offensive play calling from Saturday. I think that obviously through the non-conference here, you've seen actually a very balanced team, I was thinking this team was going to be run heavy, especially after the first game with the amount of success they've had there. But it's basically, when you look at the stats, pretty 50-50 in terms of total yardage between rushing and passing, first down. Obviously, when Minnesota gets into the red zone, they're going to run the ball. But even still, I just think that the play calling in terms of obviously in third down efficiency, Minnesota's actually, I think, around 45% or so. And then red zone efficiency, they've converted every red zone opportunity into points. And I believe all but one have been a touchdown. So I'll kick it to you, Derek, saying, you know, you've seen the play calling from Jay Johnson in terms of he's letting Mitch do more things that he thinks he's able to do on the field in terms of if he sees something that doesn't look right for the play, he's able to check out of it. Or even Mitch talked about after the game, he's able to slide protection one way or another now, or even just audible out of the play. What have you seen from Jay Johnson's play calling here through the first three games?
I think that you kind of stole my thunder. I was going to bring that up. I think the biggest the biggest positive change on either side of the ball this year, and I don't want to take anything away from the players. It is, you know, at the end of the day, it is about execution, but the biggest positive change I think this team has seen this year is play calling. And I think we get, as fans, we get caught up and we think play calling is synonymous with, you know, it's third and four in the fourth quarter and you need the first down and you come up with a double reverse flea flicker for a touchdown. I mean, that's one part of play calling is to come out with that great play, pull that out of your pocket late in the game. But you know, by far the bigger part of play calling is things like the mixture of plays that you're running. Make sure that you're showing the defense a wide breadth of plays and different formations. And then the last part of it is reacting to what the defense is doing. And I think those things, you know, showing the different plays and then reacting to defense is the biggest improvement I've seen from this team from last year. I'll give you a couple examples. In the Colorado State game, as I mentioned, they were essentially after the snap most of the time playing with one safety. So what the Gophers did on the double, the side of the line of scrimmage with two wide receivers or wide receiver in a slot, they were running essentially just switch routes. So the slot receiver would be running a corner and out route, and the outside receiver would be running an in or a post. And because they were picking on, you know, either having to stay with that man-to-man or having those guys, the safety in the corner, have to trade that off as those guys switch from inside to outside. And they just killed them all game long on that. Went back to it at least three or four times. A couple of them were just totally wide open. And, you know, again, you have to execute that play and not take anything away from the players, but that's play calling. I mean, that's recognition, seeing what they're doing and coming back with that. The other example I would give is, if you remember, the Shannon Brooks longest run of the game came off of, I think it was in the third quarter, and came off of a power play, which is, that's a man scheme where you're blocking down on the front side, you're pulling a guard, and it's a play of attrition. So linebackers on the opposing team have to stay in and get as many defenders to the ball as they can. And, you know, there's essentially one hole and the cuts aren't made until after the line of scrimmage. And that was a play that he broke for 30 or 35 yards, ended up down at the 10-yard line. The very next play, they came back with zone, and Shannon Brooks took the ball. And if you watch, if you go back and look at it, watch the linebackers from Colorado State. They stay in, and they're cheating power because that's what they got killed with the play before. He takes the ball and kept it front side, and there's nobody there. He just walked in from 10 yards out. So it's, you know, I don't want to say the play calling doesn't get you everything, but it sets you up for success. And that was a couple big examples. And I've seen that throughout all three games. It's been a big change this year.
So I want to kind of piggyback on your comment about route running and just route combinations, Derek. I've noticed, and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to notice that the route combinations this season, and I don't know if this is I'm assuming this is a Jay Johnson thing, that they seem to complement each other a lot better in kind of identifying and opening up maybe one or two guys in a primary receiver, and it seems to be more effective this year. Is that a function of just the route trees being better, or is that a function of, you know, guys just executing better so far this year?
Well, I think that it depends on the game. I think in the second game, Indiana State, they ran a lot of zone pass coverage because they needed help in the running game. They were physically overmatched, so they needed to run zone, and Starting in the second half of last year, I think we saw Mitch Leidner's own passing game, which we talked about on the podcast last year, really took off. And that's where he, you know, mentally as a senior, he's seen the looks, he's developed. And so if they're in a situation where they're seeing just straight up zone coverage from the linebackers to the secondary, they're in a good position. I think we saw that last year. I do think this year, some of the differences you've seen have come from what they've had this year, and they've not had at least the previous couple of years, is the ability for the outside wide receiver, Tyler Johnson this year, is someone with the ability to run a good comeback, stop, or an out route. And that's going to become more important, actually, I would predict, as we come into the Big Ten season. So I think that's helped them, and I think that'll be crucial, because I think as we get into the Big Ten, what you're going to see is that at least the wide receiver coverage is going to become, you're going to see more press coverage. Whether it's one or two safeties, it doesn't matter. I think you're going to, and that was really lacking in years past. So I think that's a big factor, because you open that up and then they end up having to play him press coverage, which limits your combinations on that side. And it sometimes opens up the other side. So I think, you know, I'm not trying to avoid a clear answer. I think it's a combination of things, but they have, the play calling and some of the reaction to what the defense is doing is, I think, why you're seeing guys more wide open.
Right. And I'll just kind of close on that. Tracy Clay's, you know, this season has, or not just this season, but even all off season, he's been very adamant to saying that they're going to take what the defense gives them. We talked about this last year, you know, quite often, and it was something that he was adamant about, but last season that was something they seemingly didn't want to do all of last year, take advantage of what the defense was giving them. They were so set in their ways, you know, run power and kind of initiate their style of play. It's just refreshing to see them try and take advantage of what the defense gives them and just exploit that as much as possible.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're, as an offensive coach, what you want to do is start with your strength, and you want to use that as much as the defense allows you to. So even in this game, you saw the last game, you saw Colorado State gearing up to stop the run. But if you're still able to do it and you're still able to have success, you're going to find the running plays or the formations that are working better, but you're going to stay with that as much as you can. Now, I think what you're saying is, and what we saw last year at times was when things tightened up and those teams were, I mean, the Northwestern game is a good example last year that, I mean, they had a terrific front seven. They were committed to stopping Minnesota and power in the running game, and Minnesota didn't have much success, and they didn't have a second, third, and fourth option to counter that. And that was frustrating. I mean, play calling is not going to get you out of everything. You have to execute, but you have to put the players in the position, you know, you have to provide a mix that gives the defense a little bit to think about.
All right. I'm going to switch to a little bit of obviously it is a negative with all the O-line pre-snap penalties, Derek. Obviously you being a former offensive lineman can hopefully shed some light on this, but I think through three games, Minnesota's had four or five or six pre-snap penalties, and especially at the center position, you know, for whatever reason, whether the snap's delayed or Tyler flinches. But what do you think is going on with all these pre-snap penalties, especially on the offensive line through three games so far?
Well, I know early, I think it was the first game, you had some penalties early in the game and snap infractions, and that's usually, I'm not trying to take them off the hook, but many times that's the defense trying, which is a penalty, but it's never called. The defense trying to mimic the snap, and so they're either clapping or yelling, because if you're going on first sound, you know, that can happen. I don't think that's been the case for all of them by any means, but I think you saw a little bit of that early. And, you know, it really depends on, and I don't know exactly what they're doing, but it really depends on how they're handling the cadence, how much they're going on first sound, what the triggers are for the quarterback to, you know, if the guard is tipping him off when he's ready to snap the ball. But a big part of it can be you're looking to, you know, you're thinking about your assignment and you're looking to get off, you know, you're looking to explode off the ball. And so you're trying to find any edge. You're coming off quick. I would say if there's one area, and we talked about the improvement in physicality and finishing the play, if there's anywhere that I think they can improve and something they can work on is their mobility. So I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to come off fast. Some of the backside blocking, you know, could be better. And then the next thing to work on is the blocking on the next level. I don't think they're quite there yet. You know, they're not as clean on the linebacker level as they probably want to be. And so it could be attributed to that. You know, they're trying to play faster and play with more speed. I will definitely say they're running a much, much higher percentage of zone this year than they were last year. Last year was at least 6, 7, 8 power runs for every one zone. And this year it's much closer to 50-50. So zone is you're blocking space. You have to have more mobility because you're blocking a larger chunk of the field, essentially. Many times in power, you're blocking a smaller, you're double teaming, you're blocking a smaller part of the field. So quickness isn't as much of a factor. So I think maybe the combination of those things.
One final thing about the offense I want to ask you about, Derek, since we haven't had a chance to talk with you here in the non-conference, is the play of Mitch Leiner. Obviously, he's finally healthy now. I think that is playing a factor into his play. But, I mean, he looks so comfortable in the pocket. He's making great decisions with the ball, and he's being elusive in open space when he's on the zone read or whatever it may be. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on what you've seen from Mitch Leiner through three games.
Well, I think the Colorado State game was the sharpest game, you know, in terms of both mentally and then physically, you know, making – they blitzed an awful lot. Actually, all three games, frankly, there was a fair amount of blitzing. So first and foremost, I would say his ability to react to that, you know, pre-snap reads have been good. And that's what you expect out of a senior. That part of the game is going to be – you know, you expect good things there, and I think he's delivered on that. And, you know, I think improvement this year, big, you know, so far has been the post-snap reads, you know, recognizing coverages. We talked about the switch route. That's a simple two-route read. You look at the way the safety plays or the way the corner plays it, you make your decision, you throw the ball. And, you know, you've been through it so many times, you've had so much experience, you just recognize that a split second earlier allows you to put more effort and a little more accuracy on your throws. So I think, you know, where he's struggled in the past, I think he's always been a good, you know, for the most part, been a good mental, you know, student of the game, if you will, and had good mental capacity for reading defenses and choosing the right guy. He just at times can be shaky with accuracy. And so I think you saw a little bit of that in the first game, and he kind of goes through spells at times. And that's just part of, you know, that's football. You know, you're going to have those, you know, you're not always going to be on 100%, you know, physically. So, but yeah, I would, this year is, you're just seeing a crisp, sharp decision-making, both pre-snap with audibles and then post-snap, you know, deciding, reading the routes and deciding who to throw to. And then lastly, you know, in the running game, everybody's talked about it. He just physically looks healthier, looks faster. I would say a lot of their zone read, from what I can tell, is more predetermined this year. He's not doing as much. He's not optioning the end man quite as often. I think a lot of the keeps that you're seeing are predetermined. So especially in the red zone, you know, the goal line there, those are predetermined where they're asking. They know it's going to be an option keep. But regardless, you know, he's executing physically as good, you know, as good as he ever has, probably the best he ever has this year.
All right, you know, being 3-0 and you know, scoring more points this non-conference season than really just about any other season in years past under Jerry Kill / Tracy Clay's offense, it's really nice, and there are a lot of positives, but there have been some negatives in this non-conference and even in this Colorado State in this Colorado State game. And to me, Derek, one of the things that stood out was they struggled with the run fit at times. For the most part, they played it pretty well, but there were times that it wasn't very good. Can you touch on the run fit and why they struggled there?
Sure. They ran, Minnesota ran, I would say over 50% with a three-man front in the running game. In the run defense, run downs. And then as the game went on, they mixed in more of a four-man defensive line, so 4-3 formation. But I would say where Colorado had their success, they ran the majority of it was a zone or a zone read. And Colorado State lived on the cutback. So in general, Minnesota was very aggressive with their linebackers. So when they were reading front side zone, they were attacking the front side. So they were, I'm not going to say overcommitting, but they were reacting fast. They were playing fast. They were jumping front side, and which opened up your cutback lanes. And when that happens, what you need is you need your backside secondary to commit and come up fast and make the tackle. It's the difference between a 2-yard gain and a 10-yard gain is how fast the backside corner and safety can come in and fill. You know, and part of that is, I mean, I thought the Colorado State running back, you know, had a good game. I mean, he played well, and so part of the credit goes to him. But I think in this 3-4, there's just some general uncomfortableness. You know, they have to get used to, it's a different look. You have less, you have more offensive linemen coming free, you know, specifically using one more offensive lineman coming free because you have one less defensive tackle to take up a blocker. So I think they're learning that. It looks new to them. You know, they're getting used to the new looks and reacting to that. And I would say what you're probably going to see is they'll probably work with the secondary to, you know, to tighten down their reaction to things. You're probably, as they become more comfortable in 3-4, you're going to see more run blitzing and more predetermined aggressiveness, you know, rather than read and react. You know, Coach Clay has talked a number of times over the last few years that if they're going to err one way on defense, they're going to err being overly aggressive as opposed to, you know, telling the guys that, boy, we got to sit down in our gaps and we got to spend longer reading and diagnosing a play. And that's not going to be that's not going to be their identity. And so I think those are a few things that you saw, and it's going to be interesting to see the type of things they mix in. You know, the last thing I would say on 3-4 is there's generally two different ways to play a 3-4 defense. And what they're using is a one gap scheme, which is, you know, similar to what you do in a 4-3, but it requires more disruption early in the play. So, you know, you're using a lighter defense, you're using, you know, one less lineman. So you need to create more penetration in general, and you're looking for someone to come unblocked and to create more havoc or disruption with the running play early, because the longer the play goes, if they get everybody blocked up, you're going to be outmanned, outmuscled, you know, with a lighter front seven. So I would anticipate they'd use more, again, more run blitzing and move guys around a little bit more as they get more comfortable.
I got to just say, I see a lot of it on Gopher Illustrated, and I see a lot of it in my Twitter mentions saying, what's up with Minnesota's awful run defense? And do people know that Minnesota's run defense is actually like 2 yards per carry down from last season? Like, on Saturday, Colorado State rushed the ball 48 times, and they only gained 158 yards, so that's 3.3 yards per carry. And on the season, through three games, teams are on average only averaging 3.1 yards per carry in 115 times, in 118 yards on the ground, with only two rushing touchdowns. Like, I understand people get frustrated because, I mean, I even talked about this on Gopher Illustrated this week, Derek, that if you take out just a few of the long runs from four runs on Saturday, Colorado State puts up 44 carries for 87 yards. And that's under 2 yards a carry. But again, I also had someone say to me on my Twitter line that, well, that's like saying if you take out the home run balls in baseball, even still, they're averaging 3 yards a carry. That's more than fine. The issue is, Derek, and I think that you talked about it, is it's been very feast or famine, Jekyll and Hyde, however you want to look at it. Minnesota's defense as a whole is playing well on about 90% of the snaps. And it's those 10% of the snaps where there's either a breakdown in coverage, a mental lapse, just a young player out there like Kamal Martin or Carter Coughlin just making a mistake. I mean, you're going to have to take your lumps there. And I don't know if you touched on it or not, but, I mean, that was Minnesota's first true action of extended playing time in the 3-4. You saw a lot of 4-3 and 2-4-5 in the first four games. But that was really Minnesota's first time in the 3-4. So there's going to be some kinks that they have to work out here as they try to work towards some things here heading into Big Ten play. But, I mean, Derek, I just think that the defense has been so feast or famine because they are breaking in three schemes. They are trying to get all these kids acclimated and be comfortable in three different schemes. And you're going to have some growing pains with that, especially when you start two true freshman linebackers like they did at Colorado State with Carter Coughlin and Kamal Martin off the edge. They repped in Tayon Devers. They repped in a lot of Antoine Winfield playing nickel, which is something I think you're going to see more and more of heading into conference play here. But, I mean, I'm going to chalk it up to you're breaking in new schemes and there's going to be some growing pains. But as you said, the linebackers, and we were messaging during the game, Derek, that they were just over-pursuing and being so aggressive. But, I mean, what do you chalk up this defensive play to so far? I mean, do you think it's just because they are breaking in three new schemes? Is it just some guys getting used to new roles? Or what do you think about what this defense has been in terms of being very Jekyll and Hyde?
Well, I think in I'd answer that with the run defense and the pass defense separately. I think of the run defense, I would attribute that to they need to find, it'd be interesting to see the outside, what they do with the outside linebackers when they're in the 3-4 look. They're trying, it looked to me like they were experimenting with some different things and how aggressive they are with those guys, what they're asking them to do. And you can see with those guys, most of them being young, when they're dialed in and they're just sent, you know, to rush or to use their physicality very straightforward. They're defending one gap, you know, or the passing situation, they get to rush free. They're very comfortable. And you can see they get after it and they're playing fast. When they're in, you know, first and 10, second and short, those types of situations, and they're not, they're asked to diagnose and read things and react more, you can see the wheels spinning a little bit, and that's completely normal for someone who's, you know, in their first games and their first experience with it. They haven't seen those looks at full speed. They're not used to diagnosing those things over and over and over again, where you can see, okay, I've seen a team run inside zone out of, you know, a two back look 57 times. I can identify that immediately. I mean, they're just not there yet. So I think they have to find a comfort level for run defense and decide what they want to do outside and how they want to play it. In the passing game, I would say, you know, if pass defense, if anything, I think what you're seeing is the past few years, this defense is really predicated on very, very good high-level play out of the secondary. And so they asked a lot out of their safeties. They asked a lot out of their cornerbacks in coverage. And I think what you've had talent-wise the last few years has just been very, very high. This year, with a couple guys being out and having to play more new guys, they're not at that level yet. I mean, they're not playing. They're not there yet. They're not to the level that they've had the last two or three years. That doesn't mean they can't get there, but they're down a notch or two in terms of pass defense in the secondary right now. And I think it's a combination of, you know, inexperience. And then you also have to chalk it up to a couple of guys that are in the NFL now. I mean, that's the level of talent they had and experienced guys. And so they've had change there.
I think that, I mean, you brought up a good point there that, you know, with the amount of talent that they've had there in the secondary, obviously Brian Body Calhoun, who had a tremendous first game last week, Eric Murray's out there. And it's just they're breaking in some new guys. Obviously, it hurts that Keontae Harden is out. Obviously, Minnesota's starting corner, if he's healthy, is out with this being suspension. Ray Buford, Minnesota's arguably third corner behind Jalen Myrick and Keontae Harden, is out because of the suspension. Tony Durr is hurt. They don't have a lot of bodies there, Derek. So you're asking a lot of somebody like Antonio Chenault. And you look at what teams have been able to do against Minnesota through the air. I mean, they have 8 passing touchdowns through 3 games. And it's not like these are 3 teams that are just offensive juggernauts. It's not like we're facing an Oregon team or a Baylor team that is just always going to put it through the air and have a lot of success doing so. And in my opinion, Derek, I think Demaryius Travis is really the only player right now playing at an extremely high level in that secondary. I think Jalen Myrick had an okay game on Saturday, but I mean, I've seen him play a lot better, and I have a lot higher of expectations for him, especially if he's going to be an NFL draft pick next season. And then you look at the other safety play alongside Demaryius Travis, and I don't think it's been very good, to be quite frank. I think Duke McGee got himself in trouble and run fit a couple of different times. There were a couple of plays where I think it might have been on Colorado State's first offensive touchdown where they ran the exact same play. And I think you highlighted this on your Twitter, that they motioned across, and you can see Demaryius, and I have this in my GIF rewind too on Gopher Illustrated. He's yelling at Duke like, he's your man, and he doesn't shift down. And because of that, he doesn't take a great angle to the ball, and he misses a tackle. And it becomes a 10-yard plus gain. The other one becomes a touchdown because he takes poor angles to the ball. So, I mean, knowing what Minnesota has in terms of bodies heading into Penn State, because it doesn't sound like they're going to get Keontae Harden or Ray Buford or Dior Johnson back in time, knowing what Penn State is going to bring, I mean, what do you think Minnesota has to do or Jay Sobel in general, just to scheme these defensive backs and allow them to have more help here? Because it's clear that if you get one of these guys on an island right now, especially, say, Antonio Chanel, it's not looking good for this Gophers pass defense.
Yeah, I think on Saturday where you have to give somewhere in order to, you know, in order to get what you need out of a position group. And I think you'll, you know, as much frustration as they've had in the running game, I think if they dial that in too tight and they get those guys really thinking about committed to the run, and I know Penn State has incredible running back, but I think if you dial that in too much, you're going to be susceptible to things like play action and, you know, multi long extended plays with, you know, double routes and things like that. And I don't think they want to go there, because then you're looking at giving up big plays. So I think if anything, they're still going to be committed to, and what we've seen, you know, early on when the staff came on, when they didn't have the secondaries, you know, playing to the level where they wanted to, they were more conservative. And so I think you're going to probably see that they're going to be as conservative as their experience and talent allows them to be in the secondary. So probably going to keep more things in front of them, maybe give up the 5 and 6 yard outs, you know, some of the short routes over the middle, maybe give up a few more yards in the running game to keep things in front of them. And of course, though, at times, you know, given the down and distance and the position on the field, they'll have no problem dialing up some blitzes and, you know, going press coverage and going, you know, one safety or even zero coverage if they have to, if it's a key third down or they're, you know, the other team's driving. They'll never go away from that. But I think that's probably what you're going to see on Saturday. Is the first step will be, you know, again, to keep things in front of them and you know, make sure that they're taken care of not giving up big plays.
So watching this defense this year, I think one thing sticks out to me. Steven Richardson's still a stud. Like, far and away, he's still a stud. I think he had, what, 4 tackles for loss, Ryan, in this last game?
Yeah, he had 4 tackles for loss, and then from rewatching the game, I mean, he doesn't even get credit for the one where he blows up the center, meets the quarterback and the running back at the mesh point, and Demaryius Travis gets that one, and then on the first drive as well, second play of the game, I think, right after he got a tackle for loss, he met the running back, tried to spin him to the ground, and he ended up staying on his feet, so Duke McGee got credit for that one too, but I mean, Steven Richardson could have had 6 tackles for loss
right
on Saturday. And, I mean, Derek, he was fantastic. I mean, it's not something new. I mean, it's something we talked about last year, that a healthy Steven Richardson averages more than a tackle for loss per game. And I think he's Minnesota's Aaron Donald. For folks who don't know who Aaron Donald is, I encourage you to Google him. He is one of the best defensive tackles in the NFL. He plays for the Los Angeles Rams. But, I mean, Derek, you mentioned it earlier, Minnesota's 3-4 scheme is predicated on Minnesota getting penetration internally. So having a guy like Steven Richardson there and playing as well as he did Saturday, it was fun to watch.
Yeah, he seems to be having, a lot of fun, actually, in the 3-4. He likes, he's able to, they seem to be, you know, just letting him get off the ball and just create, just make plays. I mean, just create things. And, And he was, for the most part of the game, just pretty much unblockable on Saturday. And you're, you know, it's a position, an interior defensive lineman, you know, less so than the NFL where you're passing almost every down. It's not always as visible of a position, but it was as visible, I think, as it can be, you know, the way he was Saturday. And I think not only did he not get a couple more of those tackles for loss that, that you mentioned, but some of those plays where the running back was able to cut back and make something happen and end up coming up with a big gain, had the defense filled or had there been a guy up a little bit tighter or filled quicker, you can attribute that to the defensive line. I mean, if a guy is getting the handoff and he's making his first cut 3 yards deep in the backfield, that's a result of great play from your interior defensive line. And they had that a lot on Saturday. Unfortunately, it didn't pay dividends many times, again, because of the, you know, they were able to find lanes in the cutback and get some yards out of it. But yeah, he's physically playing, you know, just very dominant.
So, you know, we talked a little bit about how the 3-4 they've struggled, you know, with stopping the run, but Ryan is more accurately informed us that they've actually done pretty well. And they've played quite a few schemes. They played the 4-3, they've played the 3-4, they played like a 2-5. One thing I want to get your opinion on, Derek, is it seems like to me that they've done a better job of getting pressure on the quarterback and just tackles for loss in general. They have 9 sacks on the season, 29 TFLs on the season. Are you seeing, you know, with this changed approach on the defense and not playing so much base 4-3, that they have been able to get more pressure? You know, I think some things that come to mind are Teyon Devers with 3 strip sacks on the year.
Yeah, the 2-4, in my opinion, the 2-4-5 is the whole idea behind putting that in this year was to create a better pass rush. If you go back to what this staff traditionally likes to do out of the 4-3, they like to play a base 4-3. And in passing situations, they use the defensive end and very wide defensive end technique and allow those guys to run, you know, pretty much unabated on the pass rush which is really nice if you have, you know, a very elite pass rushing defensive ends. It's nice because you can give them that room. You know, you take away a little bit of their run, you know, draw screen, you know, responsibility. You just let them go. And they've not been able to get enough production out of that position in the past rush game in the past few years. So in my opinion, they've gone to the 2-4-5 to just basically to enable a better pass rush. And so out of that, you're able to, you know, you're still able to get, use some of those defensive ends, you know, to let those guys go. But then you're able to bring in all different kinds of blitzes, you know, pass rush blitzes. You're able to bring a guy like Julian Huff, who last year pretty much exclusively a pass rush from the outside. It was basically, you know, put him outside and let him go on pass rushing situations. Now in a 2-4-5, you see they're blitzing him from inside. They're moving him outside sometimes. He's coming off of a tackle where, you know, a tackle or an end might be coming in and he's coming in behind him as a second option on a blitz. So I think it has thus far, it's helped them, you know, in the pass rushing situation. Hasn't looked so good, you know, when the teams come back and run against a 2-4-5. So I think they have to be calculated about when they use it, but I think that's why they've gone to it. And so far, I think it's opened up a few more options for them.
A couple or maybe one or two final questions here before we wrap things up for this breakdown edition of the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast. Derek, I want to get your thoughts on what Minnesota does at outside linebacker in the 3-4. News came out today that Carter Coughlin is going to be out for the Penn State game along with Teyon Devers. So knowing that Carter Coughlin is a guy that was actually pretty successful at generating some pressure on Saturday, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on who Minnesota should put in there, as I think it may be a combination of obviously you'll have Kamal Martin there, but maybe they slide Julian Huff back out to the outside. Maybe they put Cody Polk, because I know that during the fall anyway, Cody in the spring and the fall, Cody was someone who was actually on the outside. And I think they've liked to move him inside, as maybe that's what I think he plays best. But knowing that he's got some edge rush ability. And then the guy that maybe out of the left field here is Hank Epke. Hank, I thought, played extremely well in his snaps that he got on Saturday. I thought that he was very good at generating pressure. He played, Derek, in the 3-4, I'm totally blanking right now. Are they their ends or they're not? Are they 4-techs or 3-techs or 4-eyes or what are you seeing that they are off film?
Yeah, so the defensive tackles, so not the nose you're playing with, yeah, one nose tackle, and the defensive tackles are interior. So they're generally run with a 4-eye or sometimes a 5-technique, but they've been inside. So
okay.
And then on the outside of the very outside with Kincaid, yep, are the outside linebackers.
So it may be too much to ask for Hank to potentially slide outside. If you're going to be an outside linebacker in the 3-4, you're going to have to do some things in coverage. And I know that Jay Sobel's really would be really happy with that, knowing that Hank really doesn't have a lot of experience there. But so I guess two questions. One, what did you think of Hank Epke on Saturday? And two, what do you think Minnesota's options are in terms of replacing Carter Coughlin as outside linebacker in the 3-4?
Well, I agree. I thought he did play well on Saturday, and it's going to be interesting. I don't know that I have a good answer for you, because I'm not sure that they know exactly what they want to do again with the outside linebackers. I don't think as the season goes on, I don't think they're going to base out of a 3-4. I think they'll probably still, as they play, you know, bigger, stronger, more run heavy teams, I think they're going to base out of a 4-3 more than likely. But they'll still probably have plenty of 3-4. Again, depends on injuries and personnel. But let's put it this way: if they're wanting, you know, if they want more, if they're going to give more free reign and more mobility out of that position, they're going to go with a lighter, someone, you know, Julian Huff, someone like that, who's able to, you know, use speed, disrupt things. I think if they put someone like that out there, you're going to see more run blitzes and predetermined. You don't want someone with that, you know, a little bit undersized. You don't want that person reading and diagnosing, blocking and taking on 285 pound tight ends, you know, on stretch plays and things like that. So if they want to go that direction, I think you probably see a little bit more blitzing. If you put a little bit heavier person out there, then you might see them run that more, you know, based out of that a little bit more and see more, you know, run defense, put a heavier person out there, someone who's able to take on tight end, pulling guards, something like that. So I just think it's early. I'm not sure we know yet what to expect out there. Putting someone like Cody Polk out there is possible. I think he could handle coverage just fine. I don't know. If anything, you might lose a really good inside linebacker run defender, you know, and those are the guys that they rely on to defend things like inside zone and power and stuff like that. So I don't know that you want to give that up, but just not sure yet.
All right, Derek, Ryan. Derek, it's so good to have you back. Hearing you break stuff down it's really a blessing for all of us Gopher fans. It's so fun to get your perspective. Like, seriously, it sounds silly, but it is. It's great.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that, guys. I love talking college football. It's great to be back talking college football with you guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Luke, I think the Burns-to-Brewer connection is back and better than ever.
Yeah, so it's good.
Looking forward to talking with Derek again here next week.
Yeah, absolutely. It's super fun to do this again. And if for everybody that made it, you know, to this 47-minute mark of this podcast, congratulations. Appreciate you listening. And we'll be back very soon with a breakdown and a preview again. So thanks for listening, everyone. Go Gophers.